Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a chance to look at the politics behind what's on your dinner plate. Joining me, as always, are my good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley F. Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, and good morning to all those revolutionaries out there who are jumping on the food wagon.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ashley. Yes, let's hope that we have lots of revolutionaries join us today. I was checking my email about 15 minutes ago. I usually like to start the program with, you know, some off-the-wall little story. And this morning, I really didn't have one. Well, and then I checked my email. There's a delightful website that somehow I've managed to get on their mailing list. It's called Instructables.com. Instructables is a site where people post their inventions and creations. I can honestly say I don't think I've ever seen any practical invention, you know, not one that I would want to rush out and build. And this morning's newsletter was no exception. favorite item this week is something called the Beerkini. And the description is the ultimate beach party accessory. The Beerkini is part sexy bikini, part bottle opener. Make your own custom Beerkini with this free pattern, or transform your own swimsuit with a couple of simple modifications. Either way, you're sure to be at the hit of the party with this fun and functional swimsuit.
Okay.
I can't even put a visual around that one, Simon. I'm trying. I'm squinting.
Is this for guys or what?
No. It's for females. As opposed to the mankini.
Oh, I see. I thought that was a type of pasta.
the second story, which I haven't had a chance to peruse, but the title reads 10 Unusual Uses for Butter. Yeah, I can only imagine.
Is this a children's show or what? We're not sponsored by Disney, are we?
No, thank goodness. So, anyway, on with the program. Where would you like to start today?
Well, before we jump in, I really wanted to take a moment and pay tribute to Jack Garner, who passed away yesterday. And most people don't know who he is, but he's the older brother of the famous actor James Garner. And Jack probably appeared in 100 movies and TV shows, but he was a marvelous guy. I saw him sing early in his career, but he was much older than at the Coconut Grove, and he backed up a bunch of groups and opened for other singers and in Los Angeles and at the same time that he was acting. But Jack started out and spent 11 years as a professional baseball player, a number of years as a golf pro, and then a number of years as a singer and actor. And in every movie of James Garner's and on Rockford and all his other TV shows, Jack's head pops up all around. And just a wonderful guy. He died yesterday at the age of 84. And while he wasn't famous, he was a terrific human being, and everybody I know will miss him. So today we're going to go around the world of food politics to continue our discussion of vaccines. We're going to discuss the testimony of Philip Incow, a doctor, regarding the mandatory hepatitis vaccination of newborn children, something we discussed last week and really didn't get a chance to get to. In fact, there's so much to discuss about vaccinations. We might be back here in a month or 6 weeks with the latest on again. But before we start, I want everyone to understand, again, we're not experts in this area. But we're concerned as authors and citizens. And sometimes Ashley, Simon, and I talk between shows about this. And we're just aghast at some of this stuff. And we don't know the answers. We don't claim to know the answers. What we're doing is asking questions, putting facts out there, offering some thoughts about the areas that we do have opinions so we can stimulate conversation about this. If you have children or intend to have any in your future, this is important information for you to consider because this really impacts your life with your children. Because the bottom line is you can't rely upon doctors who just parrot the drug company's prepared marketing answers. You can't rely upon the print media. As we all know, they're corrupted by these huge drug companies' ads, and including your local newspaper. You can't rely on the television news either, because if you look at the commercials, 90% of the advertising dollars on the news come from food and drug companies. So you can't offend one drug company without the rest of them cutting off your advertising. And every time there's been an issue, for example, Jeffrey Wiegand, the whistleblower who gave all that information about cigarettes that caused us to reach this where we are today with how addicting cigarettes are, the cigarette companies were powerful enough to get even 60 Minutes to can a story. And for a long time, their financial might kept this information from the public. So when it comes to the vaccinations, the media participates in this dissemination of inaccurate and misleading information. And their reason is because they can't afford to defend their own sponsors. But before we jump into this, I wanted to really hit a quick subject, and that's the update.
Wait, Manny. Before you go on, because I want to go back to Dr. LaPook on CBS, correct?
Right.
And all of CBS's sponsors are done with the drug company, or a large number of them, drug company or the food company. And last week when he was asked about vaccines, right? Wasn't it vaccines he was asked about? And he came back and said that it's unfounded and that there's, generally I'm summing it up, unfounded, there's no side effects on vaccines. Now, that was disturbing to me because the facts are the facts are the facts. There's just too much evidence that points differently, and it's dealing with those facts and trying to come up with a better way of helping people to build their own immune system.
Before we jump in, I just wanted to hit some quick GMO updates. I mean, it's Monsanto time.
We're eight minutes
into the program, and we're only just getting to Monsanto.
You know, Simon, I try to avoid them. They just won't go away. They're like that thing you step in the meadow that won't get off your shoes no matter how hard you scrape it. Well, it turns out, you know, in Canada, as we know, 80% of the processed foods like the United States have GMO ingredients. And they still grow soy, corn, canola, cotton, and now sugar beets in Canada, okay? So pretty soon all their sugar is going to come from sugar
which
beets.
Is really sad because the beets are good for the liver and healing the liver. And it's beets are so important for the body, and it's a natural healing thing. And to have it now be a GMO mutated thing, bad.
And, you know, Simon, it must be the Simon Barrett factor, but we have a lot of listeners in Canada, and one of them pointed out to me that even though, you know, it's voluntary to label GMO products, which we know nobody's ever voluntarily done it, the latest media survey showed that 90 to 95% of Canadians favor mandatory labeling, but the government just doesn't care what we want. They're ignoring it, so... Anyway, what happened is that basically they're now having a problem where they're about to force the alfalfa down their throat, they're about to force GMO salmon down their throats, the environment, viral pigs are closer to the plate, and everybody in Canada is somewhat in an uproar over this labeling issue. So I think it's important to know that we're not the only country that is pushing this as hard as we are right now. and that other countries, and I include New Zealand, all the countries in Europe, Australia, are fighting over these same issues. So,
and 19 studies link GMO foods to organ disruption. 19.
Yeah.
So, you know, yes, I want a label on it. Don't
yeah,
you, Manny?
Absolutely.
So what might happen, I know Canada very well. It is possible that there will be a real upswell, and they will force that labeling. And if that happens, then I could see a great deal of pressure being applied to the U.S. And it might have a beneficial trickle down effect.
Yeah, I agree. Anything that passes in any country that jumps in on this will just encourage more Americans to get stronger about it. But the biggest, most important thing is education. We have found everyone we discuss this with who knows nothing about GMO foods, the minute they hear about what's going on behind their back, they just get their backs up like all Americans do. It's like, I don't want to do this. They haven't consulted me.
I've lost count at how many phone calls have come in with people whose children are suddenly diagnosed with things like Crohn's. Crohn's and cancer is a big deal right now.
Yeah.
But the Crohn's, the minute Manny starts describing to people about the GMO and they go off the GMO, it's amazing how their gut clears up and heals. So, okay, so we don't have a bunch of rats that they're testing on, but we actually have human beings that are having a response. So I think the human beings having response, since they've decided to use us as guinea pigs, they should start listening to those responses, don't you, Manny?
Absolutely. Well, we forgot to pull the
forgot
other phone.
Forgot to pull the other phone. Let me go get it. It's for me. I got it, honey. It's my phone call.
Anyway, Simon, you know, but you're exactly right. This is really a worldwide battle. And the importance of the worldwide battle is to spread the efforts of Monsanto around into other areas and make them fight on every front, much like any other war in any other, you know, time. Basically, the best way to win a war is to spread everybody out, and you push the wrong line at it.
It's for me, honey. It was the other line. It's my call.
You know, I don't know what I'm going to do with her, you know, Simon. Anyway, seriously, getting back to that, it's just an issue of pushing it everywhere we can, because somewhere along the line, if we can get 90 or 80% of the world to agree with all of us, it puts pressure on all the governments. But I really want to stretch this out, because this now moves back to where we are with about notifying people and giving people knowledge, and how when people have knowledge, they're empowered to change things. Well, one of the issues coming back to vaccinations before we get into the good and bad and ugly of them is I want to read a quote from the CDC from 1979. Vaccinations are recommended and administered to millions of children and other individuals each year on the presumption that the benefits far outweigh the risk. The benefit side of the equation is straightforward. Vaccinations can prevent serious disease. The risk side is not as straightforward, since it includes factors that are known and others that may exist but have not yet been discovered. The propagation of fear by the media and by its sources in the public health industry has resulted in the growth of power of this industry far beyond the usual checks and balances of a democracy. So we have the CDC admitting that the media, public health industry, and everybody interfering with vaccines. Since 1979, the presidents and everybody have basically shut them up, and they make no statement whatsoever these days. So what's happened is part of this power that they're talking about, and one aspect is the ability of many state health departments to legally mandate a new vaccination for all children, completely bypassing any discussion or deliberation. We just can't do this in a democracy. So I'm going to go directly to the problem. The California state legislature, with lots of donations from the drug companies and a big push by Merck, offered Assembly Bill 499, which will allow someone to give your 12-year-old child, if you have one, Gardasil and other vaccines without your knowledge or consent. And before we jump into the rest of the law, Gardasil is the one that Governor Perry got in trouble for in Texas.
Yes, it is.
And
absolutely.
Isn't this the one they wanted to give to 12 or 13-year-old girls that they thought may stop them from getting cervical cancer? And now they're talking about giving it without a parent's consent?
And the worst part, after doing a little more research on the Gardasil, is some reports came back that the rDNA is actually synthetic. They are actually making it up synthetically in the lab. It creates a mutation because it's the same kind of genetically modified that we're talking about with the food. So there's just no way of knowing the response it's going to be because it's genetically engineered. It's inserted into a yeast cell. The VLP virus-like protein then is in the rDNA, which is the synthetic rDNA. It's not a natural part of your genes. It's not part of your genetics. It's not part of a natural genetic at all.
And then why is it there?
It's part of this synthetic Merck, let's go make a lot of money because they're making this Gardasil. And as far as a lot of people keep saying over and over, that the consequences are hard to predict. Some doctors say that they say that this is a biohazardous substance that persists in the blood. This is repeated over and over. It's causing, I'm going to read what a particular doctor had said, was that it's causing a mutation. The host cell, which is the person, contains human DNA as well as genetically engineered viral DNA. So the host cell contains human DNA as well as a engineered viral DNA, the host cell. I'm going back and forth on this vaccine going, how can they give this to a 12-year-old saying you don't have the immunity to handle this future virus that's going to cause a disease, yet we're going to give you something that is considered by some medical doctors and some scientists to be a biohazardous substance.
Well, let me come back to law for a moment, because, Simon, I have a question for you. The bill strips the informed consent rights from parents. So if the governor signs the bill into law, the children as young as 12 years old will be vaccinated with Gardasil, and infants will be vaccinated with hepatitis B vaccine and future vaccines for sexually transmitted diseases without the knowledge or consent of their parents. So we're going to have newborns vaccinated for sexually transmitted diseases and hepatitis B. Oh, my God, what are they doing? They're worried about drug addiction in the hospital? Then they ought to worry about the parents and the mothers, not the child. If you want to stop drug problems and that, deal with the parents, but a newborn, you can't solve the world's problems with a newborn. You know, Simon, you have a daughter, and I know that you and Jan share a couple of the older boys who've been subjected to this, and doesn't this horrify you?
It does. It bothers me because it strips a parent's rights, if nothing else. I don't think that anyone has the right to say, I will do this to your child. I don't care if you like it or you don't like it, and I don't care if we haven't tested it. We're still going to do it. But the real question I have is a political one. What chances are of this bill getting signed into law?
Well, I don't know. I just discovered this in recent days. They rammed this through so quickly, most of us weren't aware of it, and it's on Jerry Brown's desk right now. And this governor is not one who would act quickly in this area, and I think it's a problem. So depending on who's got to him already, the directions it goes may have that influence. But by next week's show, I will know. I will call my political sources, some of them are elected officials in California, and trying to understand what's going on. But I believe that within the next week, every newspaper in California is going to be writing about it, and already the Teachers Associations and other people up in arms. I mean, let's talk about a couple of issues so people understand what's so disturbing. What if that baby or even a 12-year-old child is biologically at high risk for having a life-threatening vaccine reaction, but if parents not told the child's been vaccinated and the child comes home and starts complaining of flu symptoms and other things, and, you know, they don't know. So they don't know what to watch for. They don't know if the child's been vaccinated. They don't know what to treat them. So what happens if it ends in a permanent disability because the parents don't get the child treated right away and they don't know what's going on? Isn't that scary?
It's frightening, especially for me. There was a thing with Judicial Watch that they reported 371 serious adverse effects in patients receiving this Merck cervical cancer vaccine. Including in that group were three deaths. Including in this other group that they did other reverse reactions with, they reported 1,637 side effects to the FDA through the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. 1,637 side effects. And approximately 77% of the adverse reactions were typical injection sites, itching, fever, nausea, dizziness. But they also had blood clots after 3 hours after receiving the vaccine. They had a 19-year-old patient who died of heart failure. They had a 12-year-old patient, 12 years old, who had heart complication after 6 days. 18 of the 42 women who received Gardasil while pregnant had spontaneous fetal abortions. So, you know, this is not something you can just, like, give and say, oh, you know, I'm being so thoughtful because in the future I'm keeping you. Because I think that wasn't that Perry's argument, Manny, in Texas? I'm keeping these women from having cancer in the future. I'm doing this to protect women because I love women. Well, damn it, then go read. Go read what the side effects are. Really study the reports. And I, the one thing, I'm not a fan of Bachman's, but at least Bachman stood up and is trying to stand up and say, you know, somebody came to me and said there was a problem with this. Well, she ought to stop and read, and every one of them ought to take a book and actually read what these things do.
Well, let's go a step farther. Wait a minute, Simon, because, yeah, this is my question for you. Who's going to be legally responsible for all of these people who become deathly ill on
and
these
die.
Vaccines and
blood
die?
Blood clots. Heart attacks, future heart attacks, cancer.
Go ahead, Simon.
Manny, you stole my question. I was just about to say to you, okay, I see a bit of a legal problem here.
Oh, right? Yeah.
From you have a child that suddenly becomes ill, but you as the parent have no idea what the quack has opted to pump into your child. You haven't given any form of consent. I mean, do you have any legal comeback? I mean, do you have any comeback at all?
Well, let me offer you a couple legal questions before I answer that. How about this question? Will the person who has secretly given the vaccine to the child, without the parent's knowledge, be legally responsible for what happens if that child has a serious reaction? What if that is some sloppy nurse, you know, who's not even a registered nurse, but is a...
Because anybody can give it now, from what I understand.
Anybody,
if you just train,
right.
You train your dog, they can give it to you, from what
so,
I understand.
So you take somebody, you give
them... I
could
be wrong about that, but there's a percentage of people just...
Right. So they don't want to pay for a registered nurse in the school, so they train someone, give them a 15-minute course on giving shots. Well, what if that becomes an infection? What if she doesn't clean the needles properly and it creates one thing for another? There's a million things we all know that can go wrong. Can you sue that person? That's a good question, isn't it? How about the drug company who sold the vaccine to the state? What if they sold them that and they basically have caused it to be polluted? You know, I think I'm sending my wife to computer and phone school. So at the end of the day, who's going to be legally responsible for the physical harm? The drug company, the schools, the people who administer it? Where one day you find out your child's in the hospital and they're half dead or they're in a coma and they're there because somebody gave them a shot you didn't authorize that was either polluted, infected, or what?
Well, how about the fact, Manny, that this recombines. If they're saying this recombines, that alone, this means in the future your child could be sick and you won't even know why.
Right. But more importantly, in answer to your question, Simon, in the United States, there's no legal liability or responsibility for drug companies selling or doctors giving government-recommended vaccines when those vaccines injure or kill children or adults. In fact, the parent will be legally and financially responsible for caring for the child who was made ill by someone they didn't know who gave him a shot they didn't authorize. So at the same time, you know, they could end up with a brain-damaged child in a coma the rest of its life, and they're stuck with it. So the real question is, how can you secretly take away a child from a parent and subject them to this kind of medical risk without it? Well, the drug companies are so powerful, they get Congress to enact a Vaccines Act. We've discussed from time to time in which they created a vaccines court with judges and other people appointed by the government, approved by the drug companies, to pass judgment over whether this affects you. Well, geez, that you might as well give the power to the drug companies to decide whether they're bad drugs you buy in the store every day. Oops, nope, that aspirin didn't cause you to die, or, you know, in the case of my case of Vioxx, they refused to accept that they've killed 100,000 people with Vioxx, and they would turn down every single claim if they could. So here,
even
we
though
are.
That doctor is in jail
right.
for never testing it,
right.
so it's not like this is unfounded material.
So what we have are hens going to the hen house for justice and finding the whole judge jury system is filled with foxes. And they're big foxes. They're hungry foxes. And they don't give a damn about who's in front of them. So here we are, Ashley. What do you think about
this? I want to go back over something you said, Simon. Untested. So let's talk about Gardasil, since this is one of the ones that they're just going to change the law. And it said from this Dr. Eric Schwartz, which I, again, from the Judicial Watch, from watching these tests, and they came out and they said, this HPV vaccine, the Gardasil vaccine, human papillomavirus vaccine, has only been tested for 5 years on possibly as low as 100,000 10-year-old girls in Africa. No one knew what will happen to those girls or the girls in 5, 10, 20 years after the administration. So they didn't even know. They just went over to Africa like they've been testing everything else, and they said, you know what, no one will even double check on this one. They're running around and no one will find them to even ask. So who even knows with the testing? The testing aspect bothers me.
Well, I also the dishonesty and the willingness of these corporations to basically experiment on children in the manner they do gives you an indication of how cold, heartless these people really are.
And Manny, you know what? I know we're not going to discuss this today, and we're going to come back and discuss this, but one of the things I think I want to give as an example is how I'm going to give Eli Lilly as an example. The drug maker Eli Lilly pleaded guilty to illegally marketing the antipsychotic Zyprexa for elderly patients and paid $1.4 billion in criminal penalties and settlements. Now, we're not discussing that today because that's a whole argument in itself. But that is a fine example of what's happening with the vaccines. We'll just go advertise it. We'll just go get it out there. And, you know, oh, wow, so we lose a few people. No one's going to know.
Well, I do want to come back to that because that's one of the points we're making. You cannot believe the advertising that's being done by these drug companies. And this is a classic example of how much money can they make before they get caught and go, oh, well, gee, we're sorry, and we won't do this again. And to me, that's the ultimate form of immoral dishonesty.
Oh, here's Alpharma. They paid $42.5 million to settle federal allegations. Again, this just happened. Paid kickbacks to doctors to prescribe its painkiller, Cadian. Whoops.
Okay. I have to play devil's advocate for just a moment. It was several years ago, there were at least two court cases, and it involved very sick children, and the medical profession in both instances said, we can make this child well again with a blood transfusion. And I can't remember the religion involved, but the the parents said, no, you know, that goes against our religion. It ended up in the court system, and you know, the blood transfusion happened. I mean, they saved the children's lives. That to me was a good decision. But this is a slightly different situation. What I'm hearing about this bill for 499, and it's just one of a number of things that are going on in other states, is that you want to completely strip the rights of parents. And that to me is wrong.
Oh, I agree. And worse than that, they want to take out even notification. So to me, not only they're doing it without telling you, they're doing it without any notice even afterwards. So as I pointed out earlier, you know, there are going to be instances where children come home with reactions. It's very common to get flu-like reactions to these things, despite what the government says and the manufacturers say. I mean, if you listen to them, there's no reaction to any of this stuff.
Oh, my gosh, Manny.
No side effects.
This, you know, I decided last night I'm just going to take a quick little browse around, again, anecdotal, to talk about a little bit of anecdotal with this vaccine.
And by anecdotal evidence in the medical profession, or evidence that's given by people like you and I when we go to the doctor and say, you know, I took this drug and my left leg fell off. Well, to them, that doesn't count because it wasn't, your leg didn't fall off in a blind test.
Right, like Manny with the Vioxx, because here he was having a heart attack with the doctor saying, oh, you can't be falling over, you're just a sissy, literally. That's what he was told, while the test had never been, the drug had never been tested.
Somewhere my doctor right now just feels like he's pulling a knife out of his back.
I love him, and he doesn't do that anymore. He really listens to us when we come in now.
And in all fairness to my doctor, in all fairness to Simon.
Oh, he's really great. I love him.
No, stop it, Ashley.
Okay.
He and I have been friends for, 35 years. We sort of grew up as a young doctor and a lawyer together. So he would say things to me he wouldn't dream of saying to another patient. So in all fairness to him, that's it. Stop trying to cover it up.
Okay. So this doctor, I'm going to go through. I decided I'm going to look at doctors who question vaccines. So as Manny knows, I sent him a report this morning. There was, I don't know, 120 pages worth of multiple pages with doctors over and over. So one doctor is Tom Lankering. Says that flu shots are useless, dangerous, and like taking a lottery ticket. And each one got worse. Vaccinations, immunodeficiency in children it causes, side effects. And each one got worse. He did four case studies to find out after each child took these vaccines, he found that they had reactions. He did more studies. He took, he treated over 700 children with immunity problems and weakened problems after they had been vaccinated. He found that they constantly returning colds. He found fluid in their ears. He found defective hearing, asthma, bronchitis, pneumonia, eczema, sleeping problems, which has been reported over and over. It's called narcolepsy. Appetite problems, hyperactivity, speech disturbances, behavioral disorders, dysfunction, autism, epilepsy, rheumatoid arthritis, cancer, diabetes. I mean, over and over, and there was one after another that was reported over and over and over again. Here's and somebody else said, another physician came across and said, the federal government pays over $100 million a year to parents of vaccine-injured and dead children. Now, have you heard of that? Under the vaccine injury compensation program, payments are capped at $250,000 per case.
And that doesn't even include all the ones they turned down that they thought they could get away with.
Now that is just a piece. That's just I just touched the tip of the iceberg and sort of like summed up what I was finding. And over and over, it was the same responses I kept seeing from medical doctors, MDs.
So I'm going to come back to where we started with this. We don't know the answers to these. We don't know what some of this means. But we do know when we see something that should alarm us as citizens and Americans. And there's no question that these statistics and these comments by doctors who aren't willing to follow the rank and file that's required of the drug companies indicates there's something very, very wrong here.
Manny, why don't we go over the doctor from Ohio?
Well, that's where we're headed. The basis of this was to set the stage to understand what's going on in the space and basically what's going on there. But I want to, before we jump into the doctor in Ohio, I really had one quick comment I wanted to make about the California law. This debate is not just about the science and whether vaccines and the policies are safe and effective way to keep individuals and populations healthy. This is about a historic power struggle between parents, doctors, and the medical profession about whether doctors or anyone else in society should have the legal right to give children a pharmaceutical product or medical treatment that carries a risk of injury or death without the parents' voluntary and informed consent. You raised the question about what Christian Scientists go through. You might recall the story of a young child, I think it was in Wisconsin or Minnesota. The parents didn't like the treatment they wanted to give this child, which they thought was dangerous or wasn't good for them. And the state filed a lawsuit and forced this child to have all these medical treatments. And I believe he ultimately died anyway. And the parents were trying to prevent him from suffering through some of this. And they said, no, we're going to give him the drugs anyway. And the added one...
Wasn't that chemotherapy?
She drove
the child away.
So the last but not least, one of the things that I hear most from the Tea Party and Michelle Bachmann and the rest of them are costs. So at one point they want to cost Medicare and Medi-Cal, but guys like Rick Perry want to do this. Well, these proposed laws would hit cash-strapped states like California, Texas, New York, and other ones with a huge cost of not only buying these, which, by the way, Merck sells these vaccines for $108 a dose. So when you look
They couldn't find Bill Gates to do a deal like he's doing in Africa?
$108 a dose, right? Hey, California's got about 40 million people and probably about 8 million children. You figure it out yourself. You're talking about, you're talking about billions of dollars. If this is compelled across the United States, much like the discussion Rick Perry with Gardasil in Texas, we're talking of about $1 billion, multi-billion-dollar blockbuster drug from Merck that is more profitable to Merck than it is for anyone else.
They'll just do that generic. They'll just generic
there
it.
There will be no generic.
Oh, my God.
I'm
being a smart butt.
I know.
It's like, my gosh, the thought of it.
Even under the patent laws, that'd be 25 years. Do you know how many American children in the next few generations? Basically, over a 25-year period, you have to assume that's going to be 25 to 30% of the country's population over this next 30 years because of the growth rates of population.
That'll have this drug.
So when you listen to some of this, also factor in this huge amount of costs involved. So Ashley wanted to move on to a series of things. This is an extraordinarily respected doctor named Philip Incao. It's Incao. He's a doctor. He's an expert on hepatitis vaccines and other things. He's not some casual doctor. He's not a fringe doctor. He's a graduate of Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York. He served as expert witnesses. He was a speaker at the first international public conference on vaccines. He's written a number of books. In fact, he wrote a physician signer's cover letter, which goes in special reports. And this one was for hepatitis B vaccine, The Untold Story, which the National Vaccine Information Center sent out to 55,000 pediatricians.
States pediatricians. And he's been in practice for 29 years.
And it was sent to 8,000 state and local legislatures. So here's a guy with no axe to grind. He's a private physician, no ties to the government or academic. He accepts no money, accepts nothing else. And he started writing this long letter, which was given to the state of Ohio over this issue of giving, children these vaccinations. And Ash, you want to get in the Questless vaccination? It's your favorite story, you know. So anyway, yeah, basically he talks about the grassroots movement, and he talks about how basically there's no clear statement or anything as to whether or not monitoring vaccine safety has eclipsed our nation's, quote, intellectual and bureaucratic and economic commitment to vaccines to eradicate illnesses. He's saying the commitment has made it virtually impossible to achieve an open, fair, an unbiased risk-benefit evaluation of any vaccine in use today. So what he's saying is this is basically a train speeding down the tracks with no brakes and a collision with our society with no unbiased risk-benefit evaluation. So basically, they're letting the drug companies run amok. So, Simon, you have any thoughts about that?
Well, yeah, once again, it's a situation where basic rights are being stripped. And what bothers me most is the fact that there has been no sensible long-term testing. We have no clue what the long-term side effects are going to be. Oh, we'll just blindly go ahead and who knows what the world is going to look like health-wise in 30 years. You know, as we well know, there are many diseases that take decades to actually bear fruit, shall we say. And, you know, this is wrong. This is completely wrong. We should not be doing it.
Yeah. In fact, one of the things that bothers me that is not widely discussed in our society is the fact that we are creating illnesses, new illnesses. You know, in one decade it was AIDS, in other decades it's, you know, it's other things. And so at the end of the day, we not only have these problems, we're manufacturing them as we go along.
But, you know, this has been reported for a long time. I want to go back in time for just a moment, and I want to go back to 1918, 1919, 1920. And it is in the drug story, which we talked about many, many weeks ago by Morris Beale, in which 20 years of compulsory vaccinations, the greatest smallpox epidemic in Philippines history occurred, with 162,503 cases and 71,455 deaths.
Say that again. How many, Ashley?
The vaccination over a 20-year period with smallpox. Let's see. Let's go back in this. In the years 1918, 1919, 1920, after 20 years of compulsory vaccination, the greatest smallpox epidemic in the Philippine history occurred, with 162,503 cases, 71,455 deaths.
Whoa.
He reported that the vaccine headquarters, that they had the death rate of 62.24 per 100. This was 3.5 times the death rate shown in any part of the Philippines. Broken down, 1918, the report shows that 3,285,306 Philippines were vaccinated. 47,369 came down with smallpox. 16,477 died. In 191, the nine more, they doubled it. So the next time they came around, they just found that they had 44,408 deaths. So this doctor came across and he said, "My honest opinion is that vaccination is the cause of more disease and suffering than anything I could name." Now, this is coming from Dr. Harry Reeby. "I believe that such a disease as cancer, syphilis, cold sores, and many other disease conditions are the direct result of vaccination. Yet in the state of Virginia and many other states, parents are compelled to submit their children to this procedure. Then we go on to the next one. Now, we've moved forward in time to 1947. We're talking about Dr. Bybee. This is after years of these vaccines being given out. Dr. Herbert Snow comes out, and he says he's a senior surgeon of the Cancer Hospital in London. Of recent years, many men and women in the prime of life have dropped dead suddenly, often after attending a wedding feast or banquet. I am convinced that some 80% of these deaths are caused by the inoculation of vaccinations they have undergone. These are well known to cause grave and permanent disease to the heart. Dr. Herbert Snow, Cancer Hospital, London. The coroner hushes it up with natural cause, says Dr. Clark of Indianapolis. Cancer was particularly unknown until cowpox vaccine began to be introduced. It had to do with at least 200 cases of cancer. I have never saw a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person. Dr. Peoples of San Diego, the vaccination practice pushed in the front on all occasions by the medical profession through political made compulsory in every state, had not only become the chief menace and greatest danger to the health of the rising generation, the crowning outrage upon the personal liberty of American citizens. Again, this is a doctor, medical doctor, physician America. The fee-hunting doctors are incessantly hounding the legislature for more stringent compulsory enactments by which they will be enabled to inflict the repeat degrading write-up upon the defenseless people for the enhancement of their revenues. What does that mean, Manny?
That means they're basically making vaccines for profit. And the fact is, if you look at the financial statements and dig deep into some of these 100-page financial statements issued by corporations end of the year, et cetera, you'll see that Merck, Eli Lilly, and the rest of them, the vaccinations are just the hugest moneymaker you've ever seen for them. And what bothers me most about them is what little testing they do, they've done in Nigeria and other countries, particularly the vaccinations on children. Well, if you look at all these in former countries and other countries, first of all, they were done without the knowledge or consent of the government. In each case, a number of children died. In Nigeria, the number was so large that they not only sued the manufacturer, but they put a warrant out for the arrest for murder for the CEO of the company who cast a stay out of Africa. When he retired, he basically retired to a position where he could never go to Africa again in his life. So, I mean, we're talking about actions that are basically almost murder. I mean, it is murder to go to another country, experiment with a vaccine without telling the government, and then all of a sudden these children start dying. And let's get past the legal side of it. It is morally reprehensible. Would you want a company from another country coming to the United States and arbitrarily running tests on your children without telling you? What kind of cold, heartless, deceitful MF-er, to use a street expression, would do that to a child? To them, African children are just fodder. And in many respects, it's racism. You know, minority children have less value than American children, so therefore we will use them to experiment on, and oh well, if they die, you know, they die. What the heck? And that seems to be the attitude of American corporations. So when we talk about the lack of morality of these particular corporations, this is specifically what we're talking about, right, Simon?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I'll go one stage further. I don't think U.S. companies should be testing their products on U.S. children, never mind African children or...
Well, that's
why
they do it, Simon, is because they can't really test those on children in the United States, and the only way they can test them is to find somebody nobody cares about, so nobody comments.
What's disturbing to me, Simon, is that we've taken from the 1918s to this doctor in Ohio, which we're going to complete the talk about his testimony again. We've taken this fast forward to the 90s and now to now. And to take it from that time period to 2011 and see that they repeatedly, over and over, medical doctors keep saying and keep finding the same findings. You know, and for them to keep finding the same findings and to keep doing nothing more, increasing the amount of vaccines people are getting with the aluminum and, you know, recumbent DNA and all the things that are not healthy for the immune system. It's sort of against what they're actually trying to do. If you're going to try to vaccinate somebody to try to prevent something, yet you're going to cause something, and it's repeated over and over. Aren't you horrified by the Filipino stats?
Oh, I'm totally horrified, but also I'm horrified about the economics involved here. You know, I hear things about, you know, the wonderful Bill and Melinda Gates. You know, they're sending all these vaccines to wherever.
At a discount.
At a discount, right? But there's an economic factor. I mean, the big pharma doesn't go to Africa and give out $100 shots for nothing. All right, but they're getting paid. This is like running a clinical trial and getting paid to run it.
Well, I think it goes past that, Simon. I think that they aren't necessarily getting paid. They're just being deceitful and doing it behind the back because they're able to do it, and that allows them to cheat, because I don't believe any culture in the world would allow testing on their children, nor would any parent. I mean, even if the government said it's okay with us, if they had to have the informed consent of a parent in Africa, I don't think that informed consent would be any easier to get than the ones here. And in the case of Africa and Nigeria, which is primarily a Muslim country who distrusts America as it is, I think it would be particularly bothersome for them to give this kind of rights to an American corporation they don't trust. I don't see it happening, do you?
No, absolutely not. I mean, but informed consent is something that's been around for a long, long time. And what I'm hearing is that suddenly informed consent is going away. It's just, well, we don't need it anymore.
The real word is they don't want it anymore because it's interfering with their ability to do business.
And Manny, I don't remember seeing this on CBS News. I don't remember Dr. LaPook coming out and saying anything on this particular report that you reported today. I mean, is this like something, wouldn't you want people to know this across the entire world this is going on?
Sure, unless you're receiving huge advertising dollars from the industry, at which point you're being forced to keep your mouth shut. I mean, I watched this guy, and you know, I've made my living as a lawyer determining whether people tell the truth or not tell the truth, and got paid a large amount of money for it. And I know when people are squirming like liars, and this guy just could not stop it. I mean, he was almost trembling. He was rolling his hands around. You know,
he's
like,
not comfortable saying the things. I don't think he is. That's
my
opinion.
I don't think he is either.
You know, he's going to have to do a better job of hiding it.
Yeah. You know,
they have consultants that can help him.
if I were voting at the Emmys, which we do, I would have to not vote on it. I would say, gosh, this guy is, well, he would have actually done a very good job of not telling the truth. I could vote on it for that.
Well, maybe they're going to have to go
but
back.
But that's my opinion. That's just my opinion.
Maybe they'll have to go back to hiring actors. That's one reason why they hire actors to deliver some of these health commercials. It's not because they really want professional actors. It's because they find it hard to get people to lie, so they hire actors who, frankly, most male actors aren't the best educated people I've ever seen in my life, and I'm being very, very kind.
It's terrible. Everybody I know has got an education.
Yeah, so to make a long story short, they don't know. They just go, you want to pay me to do what? Okay, I'll do that. And that's their mentality.
And I think one of the biggest problems right now is, and it's been ongoing since the Rockefellers did their thing with, you know, fear of vaccines and whatever to get people to take vaccines. And it's the propaganda of fear, by the media. And I think that's one of the things the doctor in Ohio was talking about, too, that is the element that it makes the people and the public move forward to say, I have to do this, I have to take this, I have to, you know, my baby within 24 hours has to have this hepatitis B, and, oh, they forgot to tell me it's not really been tested, you know? But it's the propaganda fear. If you don't get this, this is going to happen to your baby. Well, I think propaganda fear has to have a justice, don't you, Manny or Simon?
Well, yeah. Isn't fear the oldest trick in the world?
And actually, I just came up with a wonderful idea. It's September the 22nd, so we've got plenty of time. I think we should, the three of us, come up with the 2011 Druggy Awards. You know, they're a lot like the Emmys. You know, we can have, you know, most patients killed.
yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the options are almost endless.
And, you know, I want to point out something, too. Autism among children has increased dramatically in the last 20 years with these vaccines. And although every time I turn around, some talking head, and the last time it was with Dr. Laputa again, going, oh, there's no danger to this stuff. Well, you know, sometimes statistics tell a story when you don't want them to. You know, basically, other than that, statistics say what everybody wants them to say, and they're basically lies. But some of these are acquired in our society by people who don't have an interest, namely, number of people who die, number of diseases, et cetera, reveal truths that aren't necessarily desirable. And one of the truths that seems to be coming out of this is the numbers are growing exponentially for every disease in the world. So, gee, is this only started with vaccines, genetically modified foods, and a variety of things? Okay, maybe it isn't just vaccines alone.
Well, Manny,
but the point is, the sum total of all this, and we don't know which one or how many of them, are what are causing this huge increase, and what we're trying to do is call everyone's attention to it so everybody takes notice, and hopefully everybody will start doing something about this. Go ahead, Ash. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, you mentioned autism, and I wanted to repeat the stats again, which is one in every 300 to 500 children in the United States will develop autism. But in 1978, it was only one child in every 10,000 that developed it, and that there was a late onset of autism in babies that they're born normal, and all of a sudden they have cramping, they have hyperactivity, they've got learning disabilities, they have aggressive behavior, abnormality. Well, okay, what changed? What changed? And that's what you got to put on the list. What has changed? I don't know. Let's combine all of these vaccines into one and, you know, hit them at the same time.
Incidentally, on the autism subject, there's a couple of people that occasionally are writers for Blog and News, and they write on the subject of autism. Unfortunately, they're both in the UK, but I'm trying to use them to find me some contacts here in the US, and I'm hoping on a future program we can actually get some guests on to talk about autism and broach some of these subjects.
That would be wonderful, Simon.
Yeah, because it's very hard to get people to speak. They're all afraid of going public. They're all afraid they're going to be on some kind of list by the drug companies. And
My favorite was a whistleblower from the Bill Gates who came on, and the first thing she proceeded to say is, I want you all to know I'm not suicidal. And everybody said, okay, on the interview. And apparently there's been this unusual amount of suicide that occurs around whistleblowers right now. So I found that sort of kind of unusual.
Well, that's always been there. That's why those plots show up so often in movies, is because there is some merit to that argument. And, I mean, need we ask Karen? Can anyone ask Karen Silkwood how she feels? You know? Is she able to even speak to us today besides through a medium? You know?
Right.
So the bottom line to all this is there is a history of people showing up dead who disagree with drug companies.
You know, Manny, one of the things I do want to complete, though, is I'd like to complete the hepatitis B vaccine to a 24-hour baby bothers me so much. I really would like to do a few more just points on this doctor from Ohio. One of 5 points possible plausible verse effects. So this is his writing in 1994 when he was talking to the committee of the Institute of Medicine and the National Academy of Sciences. He said that the hepatitis B vaccine, they were unable to come up to any conclusion for 4 of the exams that they found, and the relevant research, no relevant research had been done. For the 5th adverse effect, they had anaphylactic shock, which, does anybody talk about that? I don't think so. The committee concluded that the evidence was not causal relationship to hepatitis B. Then they went on to say that the National Vaccine Information Center, in its recent special report on hepatitis B vaccines, cites 38 reports. This is back in 1994, 38 reports in the international medical literature, some dating back to 1987, that this B vaccine caused chronic autoimmune problems, neurological disease in children and adults. Neurological autism, okay. This is reporting back in 1987. In 1998, there were 15,000 French citizens that filed a class action lawsuit against the French government accusing them of understating the risk of hepatitis B vaccine and the exaggerating its benefits for the average person. They declared a moratorium on hepatitis B in the French government in 1998 in public schools. I don't hear that happening here. In 1990, 17,497 cases of hospitalization, injuries, deaths in Americans following the hepatitis B vaccine have been reported in the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. Again, this is from this medical doctor writing this report up, which did get turned in. He figured that 146 deaths in individuals after receiving only hepatitis B without any of the other vaccines, including 73 deaths in children under 14 years old. 1996 alone, there were 872 serious adverse events in children under 14 years old reported. 658 of those following the B vaccine in combination with other vaccines, and 214 of these injuries were after hepatitis B. Do you find these large amounts, Manny?
Yeah, and I want to add something to that. This doctor also commented that, in addition, severe constraints are placed on the media in the name of, quote, responsible journalism, with the result that the American public very seldom hears both sides of the vaccination story. And what he's saying is they're only presenting one side of the story to the public. So what's happened is the publics have come to an unquestioning faith in vaccine as the greatest hope against future imagined disease plagues. Dr. LePook pointed out that the two biggest changes in our society are from clean water and from vaccines. First of all, there is no clean water in the United States. We've published endless articles and 4 books about how the water is so polluted in our country, the fish are so polluted you can't eat them. We were looking at a show the other day about the Hudson River in the state of New York, and I didn't know that Xerox had so polluted the Hudson River, you can't even eat fish out of the Hudson River in upstate New York. I mean, that's horrible. So, one, we don't have clean water, okay? And number two, the vaccines, there's two types of vaccines to me. The ones that can be tested, like rabies and all the other ones from the late 1800s, Pasteur's, where you have a definite plague that you can identify, give a vaccine, and the plague dies. But we're not talking about a plague here. We're talking about vaccines for cervical cancer. Well, I'm sorry, that's not a plague. Nobody's even certain what causes cervical cancer. A lot of the new tests think it's genetically modified food. Some of it's food intolerance. Some of it is the 150 chemicals you find in foods like Hungry Man and all these other things. There's a great many explanations. But this is not a virus that's attacking like a plague around the world or like AIDS, okay? This is something entirely different. This is trying to unlock the keys to cancer, and every night or at least once or twice a week you can turn on the news and hear how, I think it was yesterday or the day before, they've improved in some cancer. when they talk about this huge gain in stopping cancer, wait a minute, that huge gain is in colon cancer and prostate cancer. Every other form of cancer in the United States is worse except for those two, and they ride the coattails of the statistics on prostate cancer and colon cancer to claim the cancer statistics are down.
What got me with that stat, Manny, was they, now, Simon, tell me how you feel about this. It starts off with the thing we keep saying. One out of three women in the United States will have cancer in their lifetime. One out of two men in their lifetime in the United States will have cancer. Then they proceed to say, on those stats, okay, but cancer's down. Now, how can you say cancer's down if one out of three women are going to have cancer, one out of two men are going to have cancer? They didn't get into the one out of eight women that have had breast cancer in America, or one out of 30 that are going to die this year. But how can you say stats are down? How can you not have a Pinocchio nose when you get done saying that?
Well, I want to add something to that. Oh, go ahead, Simon.
What bothers me, and okay, it's anecdotal. Let me give you one
that's not anecdotal, Simon, and then you can finish your response. In 1994, the National Academy of Sciences published a comprehensive review of vaccine safety, which was paid by the federal government. This is what it said. Of five possible and plausible adverse effects of hepatitis B vaccination, which the committee investigated, they were unable to come to any conclusion for four of them because they found to their dismay that the relevant research had not been done. So not only does that bother us, but you have to factor in the fact that there's no research done.
Right. Well, my story, as I said, it's anecdotal.
Okay.
It's anecdotal time.
I can't wait.
Right. No, I mean, I'm 55 years old, and I wind the clock back to, you know, time I was, let's say, 20. I didn't know anyone or hear of anyone that had cancer. You know, cancer was something, it existed, but no one in my family suffered from it. So, sorry, my story is anecdotal, but was I living in a cave? Or have things changed over the last 35 years?
Well, the increase in vaccines, I mean, I think I did two or three as a child. And, basically speaking, I think it's 32 or 33, isn't it, Ashley? And that's up until the age of two. I wouldn't give my child 33 different drugs between 0 and 2 years old. Unless he had a cold and it was something I had to give him, the thought of giving those drugs, no way. And we're talking about a time. I mean, I came from a 60s generation. My children are right now in their 40s. And so here I was with a daughter born in 1970. And I'm looking around at all of the incoming vaccines, a lack of study, at a time when one of my classmates in law school, Sue Dow Chemical, over napalm, and all this information was coming out about what is now Roundup and how it was killing people around the world, and how these same companies were killing everybody around the world with their chemicals, where Eli Lilly and the rest of them are now getting into making vaccines for my children. So I was definitely not pleased about it, and I refuse to allow my children to have anything other than the two or three basic ones, because truthfully, my generation didn't believe it. So I have 40-something-year-old children who've had no health problems, never been in a hospital. My son had a nose surgery for a small flap. My daughter has a history of Crohn's like me, and that's been her only health problem, which was genetic. But basically speaking, they never.
But once she cleaned it up and did organic, she was fine. She went off the GMO too.
Yeah, she went off GMO and all the things from Manny's diet and enzyme formula. My daughter has no more health problems. But the point is they had no childhood health issues, never missed a day of school sick, never had anything else. And a lot of the kids around them had health problems that a lot of the mothers would say to me, I wish I never had those vaccines.
My mom used to say that about my sister all the time.
Yeah.
She felt that part of my sister's retardation was due to that because she was fine, and then she started getting all these vaccines, and she always claimed that, and I just sort of, I'm sorry, Mom. I'm looking at heaven right now, and because, you know, I she could be very well right when I look at this horror.
Well, one of the things that bothers me, too, is SIDS, which is a problem particularly in minority communities. I think that we had 6,000 people die, children die of SIDS last year, but SIDS was not a problem until vaccination started. So does that relate to it? Oops, that's anecdotal. But what it really is one of the questions we're asking that nobody does research on and nobody makes an effort to answer.
Hey, Manny, it's not just us. The list of doctors, as I keep evaluating and looking at this, they keep questioning it too. There is no answer for the SIDS, and they repeatedly ask over and over because, you know, if they're going to give these tests, they're going to give all these shots to people and make everybody guinea pigs. They might as well start doing the reporting.
Well, one other comment out of his document in this report, and these are in his words, because this is a very important issue.
Medical doctor, 29 years.
Okay. Though the vaccine adverse event reporting system was created by federal law to permit a more accurate assessment of the risks of vaccination, and although it really generates a huge amount of raw data to be analyzed, the individual reports of injury or death are rarely ever investigated. So, you know, assuming that a child dies of something that's related, they believe, to vaccine, nobody does an autopsy, nobody investigates, and nothing's done. It's, oh, well, he's dead. Because guess what? If they investigate or they start testing these things, they might not be able to put it in the market. The last thing Eli Lilly wants to do is be forced to conduct tests and lose a $1 billion blockbuster drug. The last thing they want to do is, if a couple patients die and things go wrong, is to suddenly have to investigate those patients and then discover that maybe it was their vaccine that caused their death, which would take their vaccine on the market.
So, and Gardasil, I think, is Merck.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about Lilly and some of their vaccines.
Yeah.
Gardasil is Merck. But the point is, there is no interest in them doing any kind of studies or any kind of research or any kind of testing because they might lose money.
Well, what bothers me is that some of these doctors are like Dr. Dantini. He takes every single patient that he has and he records the responses and he makes notes on every single patient. And he has a whole history for as long as he has them. Now, most doctors do have this. Or a lot of doctors do. And I think that data is being ignored, Manny.
I agree. It well could determine tests. And, in fact, the same doctor said the best way to determine the risk-benefit profile of any vaccination is well known in theory. It's simple. Take a group of vaccinated children, compare them with a matched group of unvaccinated children. You say, well, where are these? Well, small places like upstate New York where religious and other reasons cause them to question vaccinations. There are areas in smaller towns, Montana and Wyoming, Idaho, et cetera, where they eschew these vaccinations. And yet it seems like they are healthier in these smaller states than they are here. So those are really serious questions that have been done. But the bottom line is they are experimenting on children, okay? And there's a shocking statistic that 31% of U.S. children today have a chronic health problem.
Since 1957,
okay.
It's happened since 1957.
18%
what,
of
how
children...
What was that percentage?
Pardon me, Simon?
What was the percentage of children with chronic health problems?
31% of U.S. children today have a chronic health problem. 18% of children require special health care or related services, and 6.7% of children have a significant disability due to chronic physical or mental condition. Okay? These numbers are
wow.
Not that great. I mean, they just wow. Are. And that's
it's,
why we're
going to... It's 1 in 3.
Right. And, you know, when you talk to people, as much as Ash and I do... We rarely talk to a family without a child having a health problem. And we counsel these people every day. And a lot of them, even with adult children, some of our listeners today have talked to me about their adult children and the history that the adult children had with the vaccines and other health problems. And now they're in their 20s and 30s, and they're suffering from all sorts of health problems related and relate back to their childhood. So what's going to happen is this generation of children are going to carry poor health problems into the adult, in their adult years. And something we haven't pointed out in weeks are, I am tired of people getting on TV talking about how this generation is going to live forever. They're not. They're eating fats, they're eating genetically modified foods, they're eating contaminated factory farm meats, they're eating frozen foods with 150 chemicals in it, and they're being injected with 30-some of these untested vaccines. So you tell me, do you think they're going to live longer than our parents and our grandparents? I don't think my generation, who lived through the 60s and 70s, and when all this food started changing and the fast food started changing, we're not going to live as long as our parents as a whole. We're not going to live as the greatest generation. We're not going to live as long as they did.
But if they do live that long, Manny, it's the chronic illness that they're going to be living with. Or they're going to be missing half their organs or their limbs and everything else, because that's the only way they'll be. Or let's just put them all on dialysis with new organs.
Simon, by the year 2020, there will be a real body shop next to your auto body shop. So while your car is going in and getting its motor work done, you can go next door and replace a kidney. I mean, it's going to be a full-service business.
With at least 30 drugs. You got to take 30 drugs.
Well, the pharmacy would be on the other side.
Ah, good.
But anyway, we're getting to the triple witching hour time-wise. And, you know, we want to stimulate this conversation. We want people to be aware of these issues. We want you to read and study them. If you don't want to read our books, it's not your fault. And arthritis, inflammation, gout, and our latest book, The Food Generation, then at least do your own research. But if you want to do it quicker, go to How to Eliminate Pain or Amazon, buy our books, and you'll get 4,000 various references.
Oh, it's more than that now.
I know, but I don't want to exaggerate.
All right.
So, but thank you, everybody, for listening. We want you to join the food revolution. Excuse me. It's simple. Just read labels, reject foods, read about vaccines, read about chemicals, read about acid rain, and join in and reject foods that aren't good. Go organic. Vote with your paycheck. You know, if you don't spend money, they won't stock it. And if you want to extend your life, you've got to consider changing your diet. You don't have to suffer. All you have to do is stop eating this junk and replace, these greasy fat food burgers with organic hamburgers at home. You don't have to eat junk French fries. You can make them from real potatoes at home and cook them much safer. And basically, it doesn't take an awful lot. And in the end, as we learned, we don't get the munchies. We're not buying potato chips and all the garbage. And our food costs dropped in half. The food we buy is more expensive, but we buy far less of it because we're not eating junk. So just remember, you can eat the same food you're eating now, but make sure the ingredients are organic, just like your grandmother used to make. Bye for now. Any comments, Ashley, before we go?
Have a blessed week, and we'll speak to you on Saturday.
And Simon.
I want to thank Manny and Ashley for taking part with us today. It's been a fabulous show. And incidentally, I will take umbrage on the potato chip comment. My wife bought me a salamander last Christmas. I can make my own potato chips at home.
Nice.
No, now that's worth doing.
Right. Anyway, till next time, which will be Saturday, we'll be back with our sister show, Surviving the 21st Century. This is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy, healthy, and safe day, and we'll see you again on Saturday. Till then, goodbye.